Rafer.
Yes.
We were very fortunate, or unfortunate, depending on who you ask, to have seen Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps.
Yes.
And I know that we had a lot of questions about this movie, but one of the biggest questions on my mind was, does money really never sleep?
You know, that's a very good question. And the entire time that I've been seeing the trailers for this and while I was watching the film, I just had no idea what in God's name that title was supposed to refer to. It sounds very sexy and ominous and, you know, dangerous and catchy, but it just made no sense to me at all. And I couldn't figure out what they were referring to.
Well, I did a little bit of research on it.
Okay.
But before I tell you what my research uncovered, let me introduce myself. This is Kristen Meinzer, and I am a producer with The Takeaway.
And I'm Rafer Guzman, movie critic for Newsday, and this is Movie Date.
So, after we saw this movie, which, full disclosure, I thought was one of the worst movies I have seen this year. I just thought it was all over the place. I could not understand what certain plot elements were in there for. I thought that the female characters were drawn very shabbily. I felt that there were so many problems with this movie. I won't get into all of them now. But as far as Money Never Sleeps, after seeing the movie, I decided I had to rent the first Wall Street movie. And there is a point when Gordon Gekko, played by Michael Douglas, and again, Michael Douglas appears in both these movies.
Yes.
Michael Douglas actually calls up his young protege in the first movie, played by Charlie Sheen.
Bud Fox.
Bud Fox, in the middle of the night. And Bud Fox is groggy, and I think there's a naked girl in his bed. And he's like, oh, Gordon, why are you calling me at this hour? And he says, hey, boy, money never sleeps.
Aha, I did not know that. But he gives another speech about how money never sleeps in the new film. He talks about how it's like got one eye open on you when you're in bed, right? And you can't trust her. Right?
Ooh.
Don't you remember that whole thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which also struck me as total nonsense, but anyway.
But you know what? We're very lucky to have a guest with us today, the wonderful Louise Story, who Takeaway listeners may know as a finance contributor from the New York Times. And she actually covers Wall Street, the real thing, not just the movie. But she's seen Wall Street, and she's here to help us with some of our questions and other issues that we have with
other issues, yes.
Other issues we have with this movie. So, Louise, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And what... Tell us, do you know what Money Never Sleeps is actually referring to?
Well, you know, there's also the famous ad campaign from Citigroup, which has been around for decades, City Never Sleeps. And so perhaps that was an influence in the first Wall Street movie. I think in the meta, you know, in the big picture, it refers to the game that everyone on Wall Street plays. If you remember in this new movie, Wall Street, they talk about it's for the game.
For the game, yeah.
Right. And the game is against money, against the score. And I think people, traders on Wall Street, know you can never really win the game. You're fighting with money. Money never sleeps. Humans do have to sleep sometime. So it's the game.
Hmm. But doesn't Wall Street sleep some of the time?
Because
No, it doesn't.
Wall Street never sleeps.
But there's, I mean, when one market's closed, there's another one open somewhere.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. And you even have traders here in New York who stay up in the middle of the night and are trading different markets. So I think it's referring to the timeless, ferocious nature of money that humans can never fully catch up to and control.
Well, Gekko, you know, who's like this great, iconic, fictional character. I mean, I think Gordon Gekko is like one of the most memorable creations in the movies, right? And probably one of the most popular. But he talks a lot about that. He talks a lot about, and so does the character of Bretton James, played by Josh Brolin in this movie. One of many multiple villains that are in this movie. This movie has too many villains, in my opinion. But and both those guys, who are both, you know, representing the kind of high flying kingpins of the finance world, the masters of the universe. They both have these little speeches where they say things very much like what you're saying. You know, it's not about the money. You know, you can never win. You just kind of keep hustling. You keep
going.
That's
right. And there's this scene, you know, just to step back, there's the young trader character in this new Wall Street movie who is supposed to represent a little bit more idealism about
right.
what finance is. And he asks this older Bretton James,
what's your number? Yeah.
What number? And Bretton looks at him confused. My number. You know, what number would make you walk away from it all? You'd be set.
Right. Everyone has a number.
Everyone
says,
has a number.
What's yours?
And Bretton says, more.
Right. Right. I remember. Let me ask you, since you actually deal with these people, and I know nothing of this world. You know, I may. You know, bump into a husband of one of the people in my wife's mommy group who, you know, is a hedge fund guy, maybe. But I can't ask him a single question about that because I have no idea what it entails. But you deal with these people. And does this mindset, does this personality makeup, does this character strike you as real? This Gordon Gekko, Breton James, always on the hustle. It's not enough, but I don't care. It's not the riches. It's not the money. Does that strike you as real?
Yes, there. It's not everyone on Wall Street, but there are a lot of people on Wall Street who it's like, you know, playing sports. You want to just get more goals. It's a way of scorekeeping. And, you know, a lot of traders on Wall Street I know don't even necessarily live so lavishly. Plenty do live lavishly, but some of them don't. And for them, the money is just about scoring how they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's interesting, I think.
Yeah. But, you know, we have somebody who's not a Wall Street person in this movie, but it's clearly being used as some sort of analogy, and that's the real estate agent that's played by Susan Sarandon. Shia LaBeouf. He's the young protege, the upstart who you see through the movie. You were following him, who's hopefully, possibly going to be the son-in-law of Gordon Gekko by the end of the movie.
Right, right.
But his mother in the movie is a real estate agent, and she is really bumbling and kind of crass, and she seems totally inept, and she's always asking her son for money.
Yeah, because she's trying to flip properties and, you know, sort of sounds to me like, you know, kind of leverage one against the other and sort of borrow against one and, you know, put more into the next one, and mm-hmm. there's no buyers, and she's always out of money, and she's always asking Shia LaBeouf for more money. It seemed like we were talking about this earlier, it seemed like that was the micro version of what was happening on the macro picture, right? Shia LaBeouf is essentially giving her these little mini bailouts over and over, right?
That's right. He does bail out his mom. He lends her money. She's supposed to epitomize the American homeowner and the real estate agents who push the American homeowner to reach too far and to spend too much and to take home equity out of their house. The thing that was curious to me is, you know, when I talk to people still years after the crisis began, there are two camps about what caused the financial crisis. And one camp says, oh, it was all American homeowners who were too greedy. And another camp says it was those bankers and traders
who
should have known better and shouldn't have pushed so much credit to them. And this movie does show Susan Sarandon representing the greedy homeowner side of things. And we don't see the banker really bundling those bad mortgages. And so the movie seemed to kind of side a little bit against the homeowners.
It seemed to put a lot of blame
with the homeowners. And it certainly shows bankers as being greedy, but it does not show the role that Wall Street played in bundling and packaging these bad mortgages and the knowledge that some people there had that they were very bad mortgages.
It also just personality-wise didn't show them as inept and bumbling and all the awful things in the character that I thought Susan Sarandon was showing in her character, that she seemed not so smart,
yeah.
Totally out of control, and the bankers, for some reason, always seemed like they were in so much control, no matter what they did, and that really bugged me.
Well, you know, one of the problems, and Rafer brought this up about too many villains and who is the villain, you know, when Wall Street 1 was made, Gordon Gekko, played by Michael Douglas, was supposed to be the villain.
Yeah.
And, you know, people have said afterwards that perhaps it was surprising. It turned out people hero worship.
Oh, he became a complete hero.
Yes, greed is good. And in fact,
people love that
character. People love that saying and still say it. And it came to capture American capitalism and opportunity of making money on Wall Street. And so then you bring him back, and it's very confusing in this movie if you're supposed to think that Gordon Gekko is good or bad. And I think that captures very much where we are right now about wondering whether Wall Street, you know, if much of it is really crucial to the economy and really good, and if these people who are paid so much really deserve it for their role, or whether they are greedy to a fault. And people in our society is very torn.
I think also a big problem with the movie, which Kristen, I have to agree, I thought was ghastly. I really could not believe how bad this film was. I went in totally unprepared for it to be that bad. But I think one big problem with the movie is I think the public would really love to hang the blame for all this on one or two figures. You know, we would love to see someone swing for this, but it's so diffuse and the responsibility seems so spread out. And I think that's also a problem in the film, is that you just can't tell who's doing what or who did what. And I think, like you were saying, Oliver Stone doesn't show the bankers bundling these things, these mortgages together, and then, you know, having the whole thing collapse. He doesn't show the mechanics of that. He sticks to more old-fashioned Wall Street scandal, insider trading, rumor mongering, that kind of stuff, which is sort of from the first Wall Street,
right? Well, and in fact,
right?
What he does show are scenes that really happened based on real scenes, like when they gave the bailout to the bankers.
Yeah,
remember,
yeah.
Paulson, Secretary of the Treasury, and former Goldman chief pulled together the bankers and gave them a bailout. But he doesn't have the regulators really telling these bankers they blew up. He said, you know, he has the regulators saying, well, guys, how much do you need?
Yeah.
Hope you know what you've done.
Well, but during the second meeting, Bill, the character of Bill, and I'm not sure who exactly his real life counterpart.
I think he was supposed to be the Treasury Secretary.
Okay, so he makes that kind of fist pounding pronouncement at one point where he says, you know, do you realize what you guys have done here?
Yeah, but
you
it was almost laughable. It didn't really seem like it. Seemed like it was a little bit of a club, you know.
Yeah,
it
that's
very
the one
much
thing.
Seemed like a club.
Right.
I was saying to Rafer earlier, I'm like, do they just get together like this and smoke cigars? And
seems like a club.
And that's
no
a good question,
club.
But
yeah.
That's a good question for you, Louise. I mean, how real is that little backroom scene that we saw in that movie?
It's pretty real. And even though you all did not love the movie, what I would say is it is very valuable in the sense that this movie will be a cultural artifact. It refers to so many real things that happened. It pulled a lot of different events together. And when people, even 20 years from now, want to look back at this crisis, this will be something that people can watch and see a lot of how it was and what went down.
Now, just a couple more questions before we leave, because we have to wrap this up soon. You say a lot of this is based on real stuff. Can you just tell us, is Keller Zabel, the bank we start off following, is that a real bank corresponding with Bear Stearns or something else like that? Churchill Schwartz? The banks we see in the movie, are their actual counterparts?
There definitely are. Some of them are a little blurred, but Keller Zabel, which is the firm at the beginning, they are sold for $3. And the negotiating started at $2.
That's
well,
right.
If you recall, Bear Stearns was sold for $2 to J.P. Morgan.
To J.P. Morgan. Oh. That was the kind of shotgun marriage,
that
right?
That was the shotgun marriage. And it was devastating to Bear shareholders and Bear employees to think that their once proud firm would be sold for that little. Now, it was sold to a firm called Churchill Schwartz in the movie.
Yeah.
That's right. In the movie, this fake Bear Stearns was sold to Churchill Schwartz. So at first, when I was watching the movie, I thought Churchill Schwartz is definitely J.P. Morgan because J.P. Morgan bought Bear.
But then it seems more like maybe it's Goldman Sachs.
Well, halfway through, it kind of merges some facts from Goldman. For instance, the head of this fictional firm, the one named Breton James, who said he always wants more money, his firm bet against the mortgage market.
That's right.
And, you know, that's
right.
Been the big thing. We've all talked about this year with Goldman Sachs is the big bet they made against the mortgage market, which helped them profit. So I think that that firm is supposed to be a merger of J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs, which are really the two banks that came out of the crisis the most successful.
Right.
Now, of course, rewriting history a little, you know, no executive from Goldman or J.P. Morgan has gotten in trouble, really. No high executive has been punished because no one said they've done anything that broke the law. But at the end of this movie, Rewriting History, the character who plays the CEO of that merger of Goldman and J.P. Morgan gets hauled in by officials for wrongdoing. So that's revisionism.
Right, exactly.
Which I wish we could have enjoyed more, but because once again, there were too many villains. And
yeah,
so
I know.
I feel like by the
baffling.
Time that happened, I'm like, why am I still sitting here? Why am I still in this theater watching this movie?
I know.
Well, Louise, thank you so much for helping walk us through some of the finer points of Wall Street Money Never Sleeps.
Thank you.
Thanks, Louise.